This is the end. Nick DiGilio here. And you are hearing Adele's song from the Bond movie Skyfall. Part of the music from the movies of 2012, which we always play when we do our annual summation of the year with our best of the year and our worst of the year. And your phone calls, 312-591-7200. We've been waiting all year for this. This is when we officially unveil the best movies, a list of the best movies of the year and the worst movies of the year and everything in between. Every Friday night, we do the midnight movie reviews with these guys, and they always come in live on these nights to do the wrap-up. And this is Colin Suter and Eric Childress. Hi, guys.
Hi there.
Hello.
Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
We've got a lot of movies to talk about and lists and all kinds of cool stuff and our subcategories and all that good stuff. First, I always ask this question of you guys. 2012, good, bad year. What was your impression of the movies, the movie year of 2012? We'll start with you, Colin.
You know, initially I thought maybe, you know, this is just an okay year. I didn't see that many four-star movies, but then I noticed I saw a lot of three-and-a-half-star movies that I really liked. So, like, making the top 10 this year wasn't that hard. It was the 11 through 20 that got really tricky, you know?
That's when you had to go, wait a minute, did I like that one more or this one?
Right. And then I found myself making a 21 through 30 list. So I was like, you know, maybe this wasn't such a bad year after all. These are all great movies that I, you know, would like to include in my top 20, but, you know, I can't. So.
Okay. Well,
it wasn't okay. It was not bad.
Eric, what about you?
Well, I always say about movies, one of my chief criticisms that I think it's always very important to finish strong with any movie, and I think the 2012 definitely finished strong.
Mm-hmm.
I think from a good portion of September, but definitely from October on, and certainly November, which was one of the best Novembers we've had in a long time, I think. So, I mean, it finished so great that it actually made my top 10 list very hard. I had no idea what it was going to be until last week.
You know, it's weird. I'm looking at my list and I made a list of 20 best, five honorable mentions, five runners up, and the top 10 best. And I have a list of, I narrowed it down to 15 of the worst, even though I had more than that, but I've got 15. So we'll do five runners up and top 10 worst. I'm looking at the list of all 20 of my movies, and they were kind of released all over the year. All over the calendar year. So, you know, I thought it was a pretty good year at the movies. Maybe, you know, maybe there weren't as many great movies that came out this year as maybe the year before. But there were a lot of films that were definitely recommendable. And I think I agree with you, Colin, that there might not have been a lot of masterpieces this year. But there were certainly a lot of weeks on Friday nights when I was going, yes, you should see that movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was a pretty solid, you know, reasonably strong year. What about you guys? If you want to jump in, what was your favorite movie of 2012? 312-981-7200. Best movies, worst movies, all that stuff. 312-981-7200. So like I said, I got 20. We'll do five honorable mentions. Then we'll do 15 through top 10. So I'll start. This is as we always do. We'll go round robin. We'll go through as we always do this. I will start first. My number 20, my fifth honorable mention, number 20 on my list is Compliance. Compliance is this very controversial movie, low budget film, independent movie, oddly based on true incidents, which is people will remember this. It's the story of a guy who pretends to be a police officer and calls a fast food place, gets the manager on the line and has her strip search an employee who he claimed has stolen something, and it goes beyond that to the point where it's just like incredibly uncomfortable. There were walkouts when I saw it. It inspired walkouts when I saw it. I've watched it at home again a second time. And really, 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 really terrific movie, I think. And says a lot about fear and a lot about a blinding following of authority. And featuring really great performances. Particularly, I'm sorry, what's the lead?
Ann Dowd.
And she, by the way, she's the lead.
She is the lead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. People, critics groups.
Yeah. Ann Dowd, who plays the manager of the fast food restaurant. All the performances are good, but she's particularly outstanding. Mm-hmm. And Pat Healy, creepy as hell. Second great performance of the year, because I really loved him in The Innkeepers as well.
That's right.
So, and he will always be the pharmacist in Magnolia. So
there you go.
But anyway, so that's number 20 on my list, a really terrific, very controversial film called Compliance. Colin, we'll go with you.
My number 20 is Ted, the funniest film of the year. And, you know, the Ted character is a wonderful creation, you know, full of Seth MacFarlane's sarcasm and, you know, his ability to throw all these pop culturisms into a blender. But he's also like a real lovable character, you know, with feelings. And that's the thing that really carries a story in what could have been just sort of this episodic series of gags involving this obnoxious talking teddy bear. And I thought Wahlberg, you know, showed what a great comic actor he is.
He
especially
really
here.
Is.
I mean,
he really is.
And especially here when he's acting against, you know, a prop that, you know, isn't really talking to him, you know, and it works. It's so seamless. And, so, you know, when we get into our subcategories, you know, I'm going to be mentioning Ted quite a bit. So.
Okay. All right. And Eric.
On number 20 on my list is The Raid Redemption, just the most insane, crazy martial arts action film, one of the best of that genre that I've seen in some time. It's just nuts. It is just extreme violence, and it's a lot of fun and great fight sequences. I haven't had a chance to see it again, but it stuck with me. I really love that movie.
Won't be the last time.
Okay.
You hear about that one.
All right.
Number 14, or I'm sorry, number 19 on my list is The Imposter, a pretty powerful and insane documentary. If you were to, I mean, you see this story, you tell this story, and people would go, no, it's not possible that this could have happened. Families, their son disappears as a child, and they've pretty much given up all hope after years and years, and then suddenly they hear from. What country is it? France? Is he in?
He's from France. I don't know if he's calls from France.
I can't remember what country he comes, but from another country.
Yeah.
Someone calls and says that this is him. We found your kid. It's been like 14, 15 years or something like that.
Teenager.
And so, despite the fact that he doesn't look anything like him, like the boy, doesn't talk like him, has an accent, they accept him back into their lives openly. And it turns out this guy's a scam artist. And, I've said this before. I'm not a huge fan of documentaries that do reenactments of stuff. Like I had some issues with Man on the Wire with that, mm-hmm. Some other documentaries that do that. I think it takes me out of the moment. It makes me. I always think of America's Most Wanted when I see those things. And I would rather if you could make a documentary with mostly real footage, I'd be happy, or at least talking heads describing it as opposed to reenacting. It worked in this movie though for me.
Yeah.
It totally worked in this movie. I found this movie to be shocking and devastating and incredibly suspenseful and riveting. And it pissed me off.
Yeah.
So, but a great movie, Imposter. Mm-hmm. That's my number 19.
My number 19 is a movie I finally caught up with this week, and that's Killer Joe. just a wonderful piece of hillbilly mayhem and stupidity that culminates in one of the most audacious and outrageous final scenes ever. of all of the great McConaughey performances this year, and there were a lot of them, this one is my favorite. And, you know, you coined the phrase hillbilly noir when you talked about Winter's Bone.
I coined it from
right?
somebody else.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So I think it applies here, too.
Yeah.
This one could be called Chicken's Bone.
Yes.
I think maybe.
Hello. Yeah,
there you go. So many implications of that statement.
I'm not going to say anything more than all that. Right. But it's on DVD now, everybody, if you want to know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Eric, next.
19 on my list is Silver Linings Playbook, David O. Russell's film that... By all accounts, should not be as good and as entertaining as it is, and the number of the reasons that he gets such great performances out of everyone. He gets a great performance out of Bradley Cooper, for God's sakes. I mean, the best thing he's ever done. Jennifer Lawrence, for my money, gives the single best female performance of the year. Absolutely astounding. Robert De Niro, best thing he's done in God knows how many years. And O'Russell, you know, his movies, he's gotten into this sort of new... wave where he's taking sort of old school traditional type of narratives and just infusing them with just a sort of enough quirkiness and enough, you know, humanity to really sort of draw you in. And it's also a tremendously funny movie. It's a little bit conventional, but O'Russell has a way of finding a way around that stuff to sort of make it feel fresh. I watched it again last week and I still really like it. So.
Okay. All right, 18 on my list is God Bless America, Bobcat Goldthwait's angry.
you think?
a little bit angry, p- pitch black comedy about a guy played by Joel Murray, who is just this frustrated guy who hates his job, diagnosed with a fatal disease, hates everybody around him, and, you know, watches TV and hates everything that's on the television, and watches one of those super sweet 16 birthday things on MTV, is so frustrated with the way that this 16-year-old girl is treating her parents. He gets a gun, finds the girl, and shoots her. And then teams up with a teenage girl who went to school, a classmate of this girl, and they go on a killing spree. And it's not the most, you know, like it time right now. It's not the most timely movie to watch, or maybe it is. It is, I think, really, really funny and really, really dark and really twisted. And I think a lot of the stuff that makes America seem stupid and moronic is dealt with, I think, really smartly here. The relationship between Joel Murray's character and I can't remember the actress's name.
Tara Lynn Barr
is awesome. It could have been creepy, it could have been corny, but it's not, and it's really great. And fantastic use of Alice Cooper music in the movie. So I really loved it. Bobcat Goldthwait's God Bless America. He's become a pretty brilliant black comedy writer-director, I think. And with this one, and especially World's Greatest Dad, which I still think is the best movie he's ever made. So that's number 18 on my list.
My 18 is Chronicle. One of the, probably the most effective and inventive and probably the most frightening found footage film since Blair Witch. But it's also like a really smart and sophisticated tale of, you know, teen angst and rebellion and being an outsider, which was a common theme this year. And I just thought the final confrontation of this movie, the final sequence, had me asking, and I don't ask this very often, how did they do that? You know,
yeah.
It's one of those things where it's just like, you know, that's, you know, we see so many, you know, behind the scenes DVD documentaries now. We kind of know how everything's done, green screen and all that. But there are so few instances when you watch a movie and you think, how did they do this? This is incredible. It's so well done. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to more from this director, Josh Trank. And it's because I thought Chronicle, I think, was one of the bigger surprises of this year, especially for a February movie.
Yeah. I'm with you, but I called that one, by the way. Yeah.
You did. That was one of your calls.
There were a few that came out, two, three that came out this year that I called.
Yeah.
And Chronicle didn't make my list, but I liked it very much.
Yeah,
it was one of the ones that I was struggling with a spot.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Eric?
Number 18 on my list is The Impossible, the story of the 2004 tsunami disaster that wiped out countless lives. And this was the story of one family that was vacationing there, and we see Naomi Watts and her son, wonderfully played by Tom Holland, one of the best child performances in many years, go through this disaster. And then the film, directed by Juan Antonio Bayona, who did The Orphanage, really kind of takes sort of a Spielbergian flair in the way he sort of treats the sort of the reunion and the struggle that they have with trying to find each other and just trying to survive once the aftermath has subsided. It was a really powerful film with probably the best disaster sequence maybe ever. So The Impossible is 18 on my list.
Okay. Let's take a quick break, and we'll jump right back into the list. We are doing the best movies of the year right now. We have five honorable mentions, which we're doing right now, then five runners-up, and then the top 10 best films of 2012. We'll come back and start with number 17 on the best list, coming up right after this. Nick DiGilio here live from the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. If you saw, well, if you were one of the few people who saw this movie, The Perks of Being a Wallflower, then you know that this was a very integral song used in that movie, David Bowie's Heroes, and we'll talk. I got a feeling that The Perks of Being a Wallflower is going to be mentioned tonight as we move on. We are talking about the best movies of 2012. Eric and Colin are here, and we are at number 17 right now. We've given you 20, 19, and 18. So here's number 17 on the best list, on my best list. Number 17 is The Sessions with John Hawks and Helen Hunt. I was really moved by it. William, I want to mention William Macy, who's awesome in it. I really like this movie a lot. I think it transcends what could have been a cornball movie, a disease of the week movie. And I think it succeeds in portraying a really, really wonderful relationship between these two people. This guy who can't move from the neck down. He's in an iron lung. He's never had sex. He hires a sex surrogate played by Helen Hunt so he can lose his virginity. This could have gone off the rails, but it doesn't. I think it's really wonderful and really beautiful. What's her name?
Bloodgood.
Outstanding in this movie. Really, really great. And I just liked everything about it. I think the performances are extraordinary. I think Hawks is unbelievable in this movie. It's a great performance in a year of a lot of great male performances.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it was a really strong year for lead actor this year, and he certainly is. I think in the five best performances of the year in that category. Helen Hunt is great. William Macy's great. I was really moved by it. Made me cry at the end. And I liked it a lot. I thought it was just terrific. The Sessions, that's number six. What am we?
17.
17, right.
My number 17, it's the first repeat of the night. It's Silver Linings Playbook. Of the two big, quirky love stories this year, Moonrise Kingdom being the other one, I prefer this one simply because the director, you know, doesn't let his style get in the way of the narrative like I think Wes Anderson tends to do.
Amen.
Bradley Cooper, I think, made huge strides this year with this performance in this movie. And it's great to see Robert De Niro caring again about his performance. He's great in it. And it's Russell doing what he does best, which is, you know, having, you know, this dysfunctional family coming together to function just for a little while for the greater good of everybody involved. That's something that he really excels at with these, you know, ensemble pieces that he tends to put together. Silver Linings Playbook is my number 17.
Okay.
Number 17 is the second documentary mentioned tonight, and it's Kirby Dick's The Invisible War. His sort of devastating tale about women who have been raped, sexually assaulted, and abused while serving in the military, and how the male status quo of the military will not help them, will not do anything for them. In fact, has caused great, great pains in their lives as they are, you know, have to leave this, you know, job that they obviously love so much. And the traditions that are carried are, you know, just flushed down the toilet as a result of, you know, just stupidity taking place in the barracks and at bars and behind the scenes and whatnot. It's an important film. It really is. And the women in this movie finally got a voice out there, because clearly the military industrial complex was not doing anything for them. So if you care about this kind of subject matter at all, I urge you to see The Invisible War. It's a really important movie.
Okay. Let's get number 16 in before we break for the news. My number 16 is The Perks of Being a Wallflower, which I think is one of the best teenage movies made in decades. And I mean that, seriously. I called this one, too, by the way.
Yes, you did.
Wonderful performances. Incredibly strong directorial debut by the author of the book who adapted it himself. And just really terrific all the way across the board. Made me laugh. Moved me. It's a genuine film about real teenagers and what it was like to be a teenager. It captures it beautifully, and I think it's a terrific movie. So that's my number. What the hell number is it?
16.
16. Yeah.
My number 16 is Compliance. You're right. One of the hardest movies to watch, and one of the hardest to shake off when it's over. It's the movie's, among other things, just a prolonged methodical rape scene, basically. And it's weird to describe it like that, but that's basically what happens to this character. But it's also a depiction of, like, the worst side of humanity.
Absolutely.
And the worst side of American, you know, or the worst side of behavior.
Yep.
And how a certain type of job can, you know, cloud your judgment when you're just following authority all day long. It's a hard movie to watch. It's a sad movie. But watch it all the way to, if you're going to watch this movie, don't turn it off halfway through. Stick with it. Is it on DVD yet or not?
It's coming out.
Okay.
I think it's out this week.
Yeah, this week, next week.
Next week, yeah, next Tuesday. Week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Eric?
Number 16 on my list is Cloud Atlas. I think just for in terms of pure ambition, this might be the top film of the year. Really tough to negotiate novel. Turn into this sort of sprawling science fiction epic by the Wachowskis and Tom Tykwer. I watched it a second time, and it's getting through that sort of that first buildup of the movie is still a bit to take in. It really is.
Yeah.
But the ride down the roller coaster in the second half of the movie is really worth the price. It still very much moved me at the end. And also, I said it was an important film back then when I saw it in Toronto. I still think it can be considered just that. So Cloud Atlas is my number 16.
All right, we'll hear the rest, the top 15, coming up after the news, which is next. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. And we're listening to music featured in the movies of 2012. This is a piece of music that was featured in Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master. We'll talk about that one later. we're doing the best of and the worst of and the year in general, 2012. We do this every year, and if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Before we get to our top 15, let's recap 20 through 16. Number 20 for me was Compliance. These are the best of the year. Compliance. Number 19, The Imposter. Number 18, God Bless America. Number 17, The Sessions. Number 16, The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Colin Suter.
My number 20 is Ted. 19, Killer Joe. 18, Chronicle. 17, Silver Linings Playbook. And 16, Compliance.
And my number 20 is The Raid Redemption, 19, Silver Linings Playbook, 18, The Impossible, 17, The Invisible War, and 16, Cloud Atlas.
All right, we're going to hit our top 15, but we have one of our colleagues on the line who wants to tell us his favorite movie of the year, and this is Sergio Mims. Hey, Sergio.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good, what's up?
See, I'm laughing because, you know, you talk about Perks of a Wallflower, and I remember Colin telling me, when he saw the film, oh, this is the greatest film ever, but you won't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was right. Yeah. But
you were never a white teenager, Sergio. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
I know. But I didn't think it was bad until this twist that comes in about the last third of the movie. Mm,
we'll go into that.
I think it just went off the rails. I agree with you guys. I think there were a lot of good movies this year. Not masterpieces, but a lot of good films this year. Also, I saw there were a lot of really overrated films this year.
Mm-hmm.
Eric knows this. I'm not crazy about Silver Linings. I think it's very predictable. You know,
You're
I wasn't bowled over by it. You know, I'm not bowled over by Argo. I think it's a good film, but it's not all that. Mm-hmm. You know, if I had to take a top 10, definitely on the list would be Ted. You can ask Colin. I was in seizures watching that movie.
Yep.
He thought I may have to be taken to the hospital. I was laughing so hard.
Yep.
The Raid, I will put on my top 10 list. Beast of the Southern Wild absolutely blew me away. Blew me away. But if I had to pick one movie that gave me more joy than any other film this year, it would have to be Django Unchained, you know. When I saw it, I was back at the Roosevelt Theater.
This was more your childhood, Sergio.
Yeah.
Right.
We had Perks. You had Django.
Perks of Being Sergio Mims.
That's right.
What this
right.
is called.
Yeah.
I was transported back to 1973 at the McVickers.
Well, Sergio, you and I, man, you know, a very similar situation. When I watched Django, honest to God, man, I felt transported back in time.
It's Flawless Big Ripoff. It's Blazing Saddles. Yeah. It's The Skin Game. It's The Outcast, the old TV show.
Mandingo.
Scalp Hunters.
Mandingo.
It is, it's everything you can think of and more.
Convoy.
You know? It's what?
Convoy.
Convoy. Yeah.
Convoy. I thought we were just naming movies.
Kidding. Yes.
Oh, please. Okay.
You know, but I will say this, Sergio. We just conferred. The three of us just conferred, and Django didn't make our top 20.
None of us.
None of us.
Really?
Sorry. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, sorry, Sergio. So we're glad you called to mention it because it wasn't going to come up on our list.
As much as I enjoyed it, and I had a great time, but I
think I have it mentioned on one of my subcategories, but that's it.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I have a couple of them.
Categories?
Yeah.
You haven't even heard the show before?
You're not on my show anymore. You're not on my show anymore. You're out.
All right. All right. Sergio, thanks.
By the way, if I could just mention some great DVDs, because this year was a really, really good year for DVDs.
Yeah.
Blu-rays. Yeah. And, you know, if I had to pick some, Jaws, definitely Blu-ray, finally. Lawrence of Arabia, finally on Blu-ray.
That's hilarious.
Children of Paradise on Blu-ray, finally.
Yeah.
And Eric knows this. I'm sure he'll disagree with me, but my choice for the best Blu-ray release this year has to be Heaven's Gate.
Yeah, I disagree.
Awesome. All right. All right, Sergio.
I know you'll disagree, but
thanks, man.
Okay.
Take care. There you go. I love Heaven's Gate.
Sergio. We love Sergio. Yeah.
Yes, we do.
All right, top 15. Are we ready?
Yep.
Yes.
All right, here we go. These are the top 15 best movies of the year, five runners-up, and then we hit our top 10. 15 on my list is The Avengers, absolutely the most entertaining superhero movie of the year, one of the best movies of the summer. It kicked off the summer. It raised the bar so high that no other movie that was released during the summer in that sort of regard came close. Joss Whedon is an all-star for me this year, as far as I'm concerned, as you'll hear a little bit later on. I love this movie. It's just damned entertaining, and one of the best superheroes ever made. Maybe, I mean, you know, Spider-Man 2 is still my favorite in my heart of hearts, but this is knocking right at the back door. A great film, just all the way around. I'm sure we're going to hear about it again because it's a remarkably entertaining movie and one of these flat-out, sheerest, most entertaining films of 2012, and I loved it, The Avengers.
Okay. I know I'm supposed to have this higher on my list if I'm to fall in step with our colleagues and you in particular. My number 15 is The Master.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it three times, and my experience of it never seems to change. I think it's a deceptively simple film, which covers a lot of the same themes of family and small, you know, communities that operate outside of mainstream America, things that Paul Thomas Anderson has, you know, done before, that he does very well. And, you know, at its center are three unbeatable performances. It's got kind of an aimless nature about it, much like the main character of the film. It could be a little hard to take at some times. But it's still a remarkable piece of work, and that's all I'm going to say because we're going to hear more about it later. I know. So.
Okay. Eric, 15?
Number 15 on my list is the best animated film of the year, and that's Paranorman. In the last couple of years, animated films haven't really been that great. Pixar has been, since Toy Story 3, has been on the downswing. Paranorman was a true original in so many respects, and watching again this week, I was struck at what an oddly structured movie it is. I mean, it has darkness to it, it has great humor, it has action and chase sequences. And a really just sort of interesting message, again, about, you know, young childhood angst and whatnot. And again, you know, especially with, like, recent events and whatnot, you know, it's a really, you know, it could be a really powerful film if you take it on that level. But the main thing is that it's really beautifully animated. I like it even a lot more than even Coraline. It's a really, really special movie, and I'm sure it's not the last time we'll hear about that one either.
All right. No, it's not.
Yeah.
number 14 on my list, and I think I'm probably going to have this one, like you just said, with The Master at number 15. I believe a lot of people think I should have this higher.
Mm-hmm.
Number 14 on my list is Argo.
We have a match.
Oh, we do?
Yes.
Okay.
My number 14 is Argo.
Have
also.
At it, guys.
It's a terrific movie. Ben Affleck has proven himself to be a tremendous filmmaker. I prefer The Town. I think The Town is a better movie. That's just me.
Mm-hmm.
But this is an incredibly entertaining film. It's riveting. It's suspenseful. It's funny as hell. Affleck has chosen the top actors, you know, that you can possibly choose to be in all of his movies, as we've talked about before, but especially in this. Everybody is so good in this movie. He's terrific in it. It's an exciting true story. It's beautifully directed. It is a great, you know, action movie. It's a wonderfully entertaining movie and a sharp piece of American filmmaking. And Colin, anything else you would like to add?
Yeah, and I think it's it's also what he does. He does a great job of explaining the backstory, you know, about the Iran and hostages and all that. But he also does a great job of underscoring just how these kinds of stories are a lot like comic books and science fiction. He does a lot of intercutting between the real life situation and the Argo, you know, script that they're setting up. His kids' toys, you know, that are in the background, you know, comic book kind of images that kind of come into the frame.
Yeah. Well, that's all summed up in the final shot of the movie.
Yeah,
too.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think the last 30 minutes provide some of the best, like, nail-biting tension of any movie that we've seen this year. Yeah. So, yeah, it's
all right, so we have a match. Colin and I both have Argo at number 14.
Okay.
14 for Eric.
I think this makes the first film to appear on all of our lists so far, and that's my 14 is Compliance.
Oh, yeah.
This film that inspired just tremendous debate at Sundance. I remember all of us went to a fast food place after the screening and had burgers afterwards and discussed Compliance.
Did anybody take out a cell phone and ask to speak to the
manager? No, okay. No. But I did have, I think some people did have chicken. Uh-huh. All the adjectives has already been described about this movie, but one that I think hasn't been is that just how kind of darkly funny the movie is, and that seems like a harsh thing to say after described it as the 90-minute rape film.
but you're right.
There's a real sort of dark satire about this film and about the idea of us just sort of bowing down to authority and not questioning authority, and just, you know, whether it be someone pretending to be a cop or someone pretending to be someone who's going to, you know, solve a problem for you over the phone. You know, how many scams a year do we hear about over the phone? And it's a really interesting film about the idea that, you know, whether it be a cop or politics or the military, that we just sort of just believe anything that we're told. And the people that watch the movie and believe that the people in the movie are stupid, I think is a little bit unfair. And I think you can justify that argument, I think, but I don't think that the people in the movie are stupid. They're just scared.
Right.
You know, and I think that's an important thing to remember. So Compliance, work by Craig Zobel.
Number 13 on my list, and I know we're going to be hearing more about this, and this one I believe you guys are also going to have much higher than I put on my list. I was surprised you had Argo at 14. 13 on my list is Take This Waltz, Sarah Polley's latest film. Which features yet another remarkable performance by Michelle Williams. It's a movie about a marriage that has not, you know, it's not on the rocks or anything, but it's become this dull kind of thing, especially for the wife, who meets and is intrigued by this guy she meets on a plane and then starts a relationship with him, not a sexual one, but a relationship nonetheless, discovers he lives right across the street, and it starts to change her and change her relationship with her husband, played by Seth Rogen. Beautifully directed. I'm not sure what kind of relationship problems Sarah Polley has had in the past, or her experience with marriage. I don't know. But she's a terrific director. There's great performances in this, some wonderful supporting performances. Sarah Silverman, particularly strong in this movie as well. I know we're going to hear more about this one as we go along. But I think it's a great film. One of the best of the year. Number 13, Take This Waltz.
My number 13 is Flights. Robert Zemeckis' sort of comeback film. After a decade of trying to make the case and for the most part failing for motion capture animation. But it's great to see him, you know, return to real life story. Well, as real life as Robert Zemeckis can get anyway. I sort of feel like the last scene, or one of the last scenes, is, you know, sort of a metaphor for where Zemeckis has been. It's like he's been in a drunken stupor for the last year, and then John Goodman gave him a hit of coke in the form of a screenplay called Flight, and Zemeckis is like, I'm back, baby. Okay, let's go. Let's do this. And he's back, and that's great. And I hope he does more movies like this. And Denzel Washington, in that same top five male performances, along with John the Hunt. Sessions guy. Yeah, yeah, John Hunt. Thank you. Yeah, so Flight is number 13.
Okay. We've already talked about a number of films. It's clearly shown what a great year for just sort of genre filmmaking and blockbuster filmmaking has been. So 13 on my list is Skyfall. I know there's certain people in the room that are not a big fan of this movie.
I'll just keep my mouth shut.
Yeah, it's probably best. But this is one of the best James Bond films ever. Right up there with the recent Casino Royale. It's a different kind of Bond film that still, you know, in many ways panders to the James Bond fans of old, with little sort of touches and references and whatnot, but really, you know, it has a James Bond film with an arc, you know, which you don't see a lot of. And some tremendous action sequences in the movie, and another, you know, like Compliance in a way, a film that, you know, about questioning orders and questioning, you know, if, you know, we're doing the right thing and listening to authority. And I think there's great work in the movie, not just by Craig, but I think Javier Bardem makes a really fascinating villain. And Judi Dench gets a really great, beefed up sort of role as M. So Skyfall is number 13 on my list.
All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we got the top 12 movies of the year to run down. And if you want to jump in here, 312-981-7200. What are your favorite movies of 2012? And what movies maybe did you hate? We are going to give you 12 through number 1, the best movies of 2012. It's Colin, Eric, and me.
I heard you on the wireless back in 52. Lying awake, intently tuning in on you.
Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. My last entry on the best of list was number 13, which was Take This Waltz. And that's... Well, we'll talk more about that. The use of this song in that movie is pretty unforgettable. We are doing the best movies of the year right now. Colin and Eric are here, and we're going through our lists. We are currently at number 12 on the best films of 2012. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right, my number 12 on the best list is Goon. the best sports movie in a long time. It's not. I know you guys aren't fans, and I don't understand it. You guys,
I'm surprised this wasn't higher.
So Goon comes in at number 12, and I don't understand it. You're not big Slapshot fans, but to me, this is sort of like the heir apparent to Slapshot. Not quite as awesome as Slapshot, but right up there. Here's what I loved about this movie: everything. I'm a hockey fanatic, and I thought as a hockey movie it was awesome. It was also really, really funny and really, really vulgar and really, really violent, the way a hockey movie should be. I thought Sean William Scott, the thing I loved about this movie, one of the things I loved about it most, other than like just how funny it was Sean William Scott played this really lovable guy. I like that he wasn't, like, he was just this guy. He was naive, he was nice, he was sweet, he was dumb. But he was really good at kicking people's ass. And I liked the relationship that he had with Alison Pill in this movie. And she played like this slut, and he didn't care. And the hockey stuff is great. The jokes are funny. It's really accurate in terms of like a low-level minor league hockey. What's his lips? Jay Baruchel wrote it, co-wrote it, and is really funny in it. And I can't say enough about Liev Schreiber in this movie as the goon, as the main goon, retired guy, you know, guy who's been in the hockey, playing hockey forever, and he's a major league goon. His facial hair is fantastic. I love this movie so much. It made me laugh. And in fact, I didn't put Ted on my list at all. And this is my favorite comedy of the year.
It's a very funny movie.
Yeah.
It's very
good. So yeah. Goon number 12. There you go.
My number 12 is The Gray. A movie that plays like a top 10 list of ways I don't want to die.
That's the best description of this movie I've ever heard.
I mean, this movie really did make me, you know, want to kill myself. I mean, not in the way that we talk about bad movies, but like just every scene to be like, yeah, this is about where I would kill myself if I was in this situation.
Yep.
Not right here is where I'd kill myself.
Yep.
I mean, that's how effective it is. I mean, it's a hard movie to watch, but it's so well done. And Liam Neeson is amazing in it. Yeah, but I'm going to stop right there because I might come up.
You want to kill yourself now?
Yeah, now I want to kill myself. It's a great movie.
The Gray was another one of those that I struggled to put.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah,
it's I was not cutting in, it down because I.
It's
thought,
not in my top 20.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
It's not in my top 20. But I love it. I really I love it. I just I didn't think it was. It just it was there when I was making my list. Mm, it was it was there. The title was there.
Yeah.
You know, but I had to put the X through.
Had
it
to get Goon
point.
In there.
Yeah, I had to get Goon in there, man. Okay, what's your number 12?
My 12 is Argo. So it was a little bit higher than you guys had it.
Wow. Oh, man, I expected it to be.
I think we're all in the sort of same camp that we think it's just really, really good. This is just really, really good filmmaking.
Okay. I thought I was alone. That's all right. Now I feel better about myself.
We're all good, maybe. Argo, I mean, Ben Affleck, I mean, we called it back when we saw Gone Baby Gone. Like, this guy's got some chops. And then The Town came through, and there's that, and now Argo, and he's going to get an Oscar nomination for this thing. Yeah. And very well deserved. And the one thing, you know, you guys, everything you said, I absolutely agree with, clearly. But what I really took away from this movie is just how tightly edited this thing is. This is a movie that could have easily gone to the 215, 2.5 hour range. And this thing just comes in just around 2 hours. It's wonderfully edited and packaged and put together. And it's a really terrific movie, Argo.
Okay. All right. We'll see. We got a couple of minutes here to get. I want to get number 11 in so we can do the news and then do our top 10. Number 11. I'll be quick. Number 11 is The Raid Redemption, which was mentioned already. I'm convinced 6 or 7 people were killed during the making of it. I think during a couple of shots, a couple guys broke their backs. All I can say is the best action movie of the year with some of the best fights I've ever seen in the history of film. Simple story: SWAT team raid. Guns, fights, awesome.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's number 11, okay?
My number 11, I'm the only one who likes this movie in this room. In fact, I love it, especially when I saw it a second time. My number 11 is Ruby Sparks, a movie that I think has, it's one of those high-concept comedy movies that actually does a lot with its concept and has a lot to say about a lot of things, particularly romantic comedies, the kind of roles women get, that are written for them, and relationships in general. I think the movie's second half is where I think it gets stronger. I know, Eric, you said that's where you kind of jumped ship.
Yep.
But Ruby Sparks is my number 11.
Okay.
Number 11 on my list is my favorite documentary of the year, which is West of Memphis. Amy Berg, who did Deliver Us from Evil, takes on sort of the, I guess you might want to say, the condensed version of the Paradise Lost trilogy, but I think it's even better because I think it's all sort of there for you. It's a wonderful piece of detective journalism and an incredibly moving story about the West Memphis Three and their struggle to be exonerated for a crime they clearly did not commit. Mm. And I was looking forward to seeing it again today, but my screener didn't work. So it was my favorite movie at Sundance, and so it comes in at number 11, and that's where it's going to be until, you know, maybe I get a second
look. Maybe you get
a
second view. Yeah. Sometimes you have to look at these movies a couple times. They
Absolutely.
Might change their positions. All right, well, there you go. Our top 10 best movies of 2012 will be announced officially after the news, which is coming up next here on WGN.